The next matter on the calendar is Linehan Foil Advertising versus Tallon Real Estate. And as I understand it, the respondent is not appearing or did not choose to participate. So you have 15 minutes for your oral argument this morning. And apparently will not need a rebuttal. So please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument. And you can raise that podium. There's a button on it if you want to get it higher.
Thank you, Court. May it please the Court. My name is Ryan Hatton, H-A-T-T-O-N, appearing today on behalf of the appellant, Tallon Real Estate Holding Corp. This is an appeal of following a district court trial. The issues at trial largely surrounded a commercial contract context. Trial court found that the appellant breached the contract, and in doing so, ordered it to pay damages. We are challenging today primarily the second element of a breach of contract theory, and finding that the court made error in finding that the respondent, Linehan Foy, performed the conditions precedent to its right to demand performance by the appellant. So this was a contract for services, website development.
All right. And I know I'm looking at the district court's order and finding of fact number four, the court made credibility determinations that favored favored Mr. Foy, and also the person from the company that had entered into the contract on behalf of the company.
Certainly, and those credibility determinations were largely surrounding the first element of the contract that was at issue at trial, which was whether or not a valid contract was formed.
Well, actually, it doesn't go further than that. I mean, didn't the court also say that in looking at whether there was an account stated here that he believed the testimony of Mr. Feider that acknowledging that there was a debt doing owing?
I don't know. Well,
I mean, I'm looking. If you go to it's finding number 14, yep, where it says on three separate occasions, December 1, February 22, and August 31st, Feider acknowledged the past due debt owed to Linehan Foy and made promises of payment.
Certainly.
That's a finding of fact. Are you claiming it's clearly erroneous?
Yes, Your Honor.
And why is it clearly erroneous? What in the record that would support your, does the record not support it, I suppose?
Certainly. In order to prevail on the account stated theory, the first element is the existence of a creditor-debtor relationship. And the only way there could be a debtor-creditor relationship between the appellant and respondent was by virtue of a contract, and a breach of contract, and then a debt flowing from that contractual relationship. And I'm arguing, and I've argued in the brief, that there is a clear error, or there is error in determining there is a breach of contract in this case, because the appellant's obligation to perform by making payment to the respondent was not triggered.
Why not?
Because the respondent had not performed its obligations under the contract.
What obligation?
To deliver a completed phase one, or a completed phase two, or a completed phase three.
Where in the contract does it say that those have to be completed before payment can be requested? Where in the contract does it say that?
Well, the contract, as you know, Exhibit 1 to the trial is a simple two-page document that is was prepared by the appellant and is silent in terms of timing of when payments are due. There is no requirement for interim payments or milestone payments. It simply states
But there's no language that says payment isn't required until completion of phase one. Is that true? Is there any language in anywhere that says that payment is not required until phase one is completed?
There's no such language explicitly written in the contract. I would submit that the contract is vague in terms of when payment would be due.
Well, can't you look at that?
Doesn't the party's course of conduct then provide evidence as to the party's intent in that regard?
Well, the testimony of Mr. Kaminsky at trial was that payment was not made because the deliverables had not been delivered.
Well, but Kaminsky was not part of the back and forth. The two people who testified at trial were the ones that were. Foy and
Mr. Flyder.
Flyder.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't quite sure how to pronounce his name.
It's difficult, Your Honor.
But those are the two people who were communicating back and forth, right? And Flyder was given authority by Kaminsky to enter into the agreement, right?
Well, that's what the district court determined.
Okay, is that in dispute at all, though?
That was disputed at trial, Your Honor. But in terms of the appeal, we're conceding that Mr. Flyder had the authority to enter into the contract, but he certainly did not have any authority to communicate with Foy as to when payments would be made. That would exceed that scope, and in Mr. Flyder's testimony, he stated in a trial, it was not his job to pay invoices, just simply receive them and provide them to the CEO, Un Stoll, who would then make the determination as to whether payment was
right, but
due.
What evidence in the record is contrary to the fact that he did, in fact, not only did he receive the payments, but he communicated to Foy, we're going to pay these right away.
I suppose it would be Mr. Kaminsky's testimony that said the reason why he
and
had
the, and that goes to credibility. The district court discredited his testimony and credited the testimony of Mr. Flyder. So that goes to credibility. And we, on review, we give great deference to the credibility determinations by the district court.
Certainly. But I think what you have to take a step back and look at the elements of an account stated, and to establish an account stated,
right,
you have to have that debtor-creditor relationship.
Right, and that goes to the point of, for a breach of contract, all you need is a performance of any conditions. It's not a specific condition, and here there's no condition that is specifically spelled out in the contract saying before payment can be requested, phase one, for example, has to be completed before the $22,000 or so can be, a bill for that can be submitted. There's nothing to that effect. And it appears that the parties agreed that the bills would be paid as soon as they were submitted, including in installment payments.
Okay. And that's the bone of contention, Your Honor. That was never agreed to by Talon. And if you look at the testimony.
But there was nothing that said that they couldn't enter into that type of agreement, into that type of situation as well. There's no communication that was given to Foy saying, wait a minute, why are you submitting a bill already? You haven't completed phase one. We're not going to make any payment whatsoever until phase one is completed.
There's no evidence in the record
right.
with that respect.
And the conduct of the parties is really to the contrary. As soon as that bill had been received, the response was, we'll pay it right away. The second one, we'll pay it. You know, we're working on it. We're trying to do what we can. We've got some issues here, but bear with us. We will make sure that these get paid. There is no communication indicating anything other than the intent to pay those bills.
There is no communication regarding that in the record. You're correct, Your Honor. But I would say is that if you look at the invoices that were sent, okay, those invoices were sent were based on hourly work. And that's established in the record by Mr. Foy's testimony, that they invoiced based on hourly work. And Mr. Foy also testified that there was no agreement to pay for hourly work. And that included in the invoices were markups of sub consultant's work over 200%. And there's no agreement.
Wasn't his testimony that they didn't, not that they affirmatively said, agreed not to be paid based on hourly work, but just that that wasn't discussed?
No, I believe the testimony was that the contemplated scheme was a flat fee for specified deliverables, broken out by phases.
But where is that in the records?
Page 28 of the trial transcript, line 12, my question, is there any place on Exhibit 1 that indicates that Talon Real Estate Holding Corp. agrees to pay Linehan Foy hourly rates for work? Answer, nope, no.
Right, so all you're asking is what is contained in that document? And he answered that there wasn't any language to that effect in the document.
Correct.
But that's different than saying that the parties didn't agree to pay on an hourly basis.
The contract, the objective interpretation of the plain language of the contract, which the parties are sophisticated commercial entities, they entered into this agreement. On its face, it appears plainly that there is phased work with bullet-pointed specified deliverables and a flat fee for that work.
And says cost, not flat fee. It doesn't say anything about payment, correct?
The final, obviously this was not a contract drafted by counsel because the total investment is $36,000. And that would say the price, the cost, that's the investment. That's what Linehan Foy would be asking Talon to pay in exchange for specified deliverables.
But there's nothing in this record that indicates that any objections were raised when these invoices were sent. Am I correct? Because I'm looking at the district court's order, and they said they retained these statements, that Talon retained the statements of the accounts without objecting to them for an unreasonably long time, thereby assenting to the accounting. Why is that clearly erroneous?
Again, because, and I apologize for belaboring the point, but simply issuing an invoice is insufficient to establish an account stated. There must be an existing creditor-debtor relationship. And if Mr. Smith sends an invoice out without any other contractual obligation and the recipient throws it away, doesn't challenge it, it doesn't magically create an obligation that isn't founded in something else. And that something else here is the contract. And when we challenge the contract on the basis that Linehan Foy admitted it did not perform and provide 40% of phase one deliverables, and then sent an invoice for nearly the entire amount, and Talon did not pay because, as Mr. Kaminsky testified, it had not received the full work product for phase one.
For the count stated, it seems like you're challenging primarily the first factor of a prior relationship as debtor and creditor. And you're arguing for that there has to be a contract, there has to be a breach of contract, et cetera, et cetera.
There has to be some legal relationship of debtor-creditor. And in this case, the only legal relationship would be founded in that breach of contract.
But you aren't arguing that there is money owed. I mean, it's just the timing. In other words,
I'm arguing that money was owed,
when it's to be paid, right?
I'm arguing Linehan Foy needed to complete phase one deliverables as specified in the contract they drafted in order to receive the fee amount that corresponds to the phase one work that they requested.
And where in the contract does it say that before any fees can be submitted, phase one has to be completed?
My argument would be it's it's assumed in the plain language. Because the contract does not provide for any...
Right, we can't assume anything, though. We have to look at the plain language. I guess maybe a more basic question is this agreement ambiguous or unambiguous?
It is ambiguous as to the timing of when payments would be due.
Okay.
And how do we resolve an ambiguity?
Well, we resolve it against the drafter.
Well, we don't get to that phase until later in the process. We have to look at the plain language and what are the reasons, if it's, is there more than one reasonable interpretation of this agreement?
Sure, and one reasonable interpretation would be that none of the amounts would be due until the entire project was completed. So you complete phase 1, 2, and 3, and then you get the $36,000. Being generous towards the appellant or the respondent here, you could say you complete phase 1, you get paid for phase 1. You complete phase 2, you get paid for phase 2. But there is no reference to hourly billing or time spent or rates of
But there's
of
no
employees.
Reference to billing, period, correct?
Well, simply flat fee for deliverables.
There's That's no reference to that, though. I mean...
The contract on a face implicates flat fee for deliverables.
Right, but that's... You're reading language into that contract, then.
Well, it certainly doesn't refer to hourly rates or amounts of hours or estimates of
right,
hours.
I think
or
at best
like
you could say it's silent as to timing of payment, right?
I would certainly agree that it does not specifically state that in the agreement, and under the analysis of when does appellant have the right to demand payment, they would have to have performed the work that gives them the right to demand payment. And our argument is that the contract that a respondent drafted sets out specific bullet points of deliverables.
Would you agree that Linehan Foy performed some work and provided examples of that work to FLYHTR?
I would agree that there had been some work performed,
okay.
But that none of the work performed was of any value to Talon until additional work had been performed. And so in order for there to be some value conveyed from Linehan Foy to Talon, it would have needed to complete a phase.
Why is that required? Why is the standard... What case law stands for the proposition that there has to be value provided and a certain level of value that's provided? I don't understand that.
Well, I think that goes into the analysis of what the contract says and what the contract would require in terms of the way the parties intended the contract to read.
All right. I think your time is well
it is.
Expired.
Yep,
so we will take the matter under advisement and